Hey everybody, I'm Bob, producer of the Adventures in Odyssey Club.
And I'm Jesse, editor of Focus on the Family Clubhouse Magazine. Welcome to the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast.
Today on the podcast, we're talking to Jared DePasquale and Nathan Jones. They're the big names responsible for post-production on Unsinkable, a two-part adventure releasing in the club. Jared's the composer and Nathan, or Nate to us team members, is the sound designer.
The Unsinkable episodes pretty much define the word epic. So these two had, dare I say it, a titanic task ahead of them. Well, let's hear about their collaboration and about creating the sound for this Odyssey historical show. Jared and Nate, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Hey guys, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Jared, let's start with you because, as we know, the fate of the Titanic is well documented, especially in entertainment. One of the most successful movies of all time kind of dealt with this tragic event. So was it intimidating at all to approach this material that has been dramatized and scored so many times before?
It was certainly territory I had traversed before, like Les Mis and The Secret Garden and Little Women.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think what makes scoring anything to do with the Titanic different is the fact that all the stories are going to be different, you know, simply because we don't really know what happened in terms of so many people aboard the ship. And So because of that, no two Titanic stories are going to be alike. And I think that kind of relieves some pressure from me, you know, but I think in the back of my mind, there was always this little voice being like, you know, don't be the composer that messes up the Titanic.
Well, Nate, when you heard that you're going to be responsible for sound design for a two-part episode about the Titanic, what was the first thing that crossed your mind?
Woof. I think because it was done in such a major film, the first thing I have to ask myself is, you know, am I going to be able to do anything different? You know, I think the typical magnetism is to go watch the film, go read the book, and go get inspiration from what's already been done before. And so, but I purposefully tried to dodge any of the cliche sort of sound effects and things that just sort of bunny trailed off into research on YouTube and everything else, because there are things that you need to research for a show that is still a period piece, but it's not so distant. It's like it's right on the outside of what we can, you know, grasp as a period piece. So I think for me, it was just, okay, I need to research this and get to the heart of this stuff before I dive in.
That's an interesting just kind of observation, because if you think about it, we know the boat will sink. You know the boat will break in half. You know the boat will get hit by an iceberg. Like, these are facts, right? But with me, I kind of deal on more of an emotional side, where I'm not necessarily thinking about, like, James Horner's amazing score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
And so, Nate, what made you choose Jared to compose the music?
Well, for me, I like what Jared does as far as, like, bringing a cinematic, romantic, not just having those qualities, but also being able to hit the dark and the scary. So Jared, for me, has a way of covering the spectrum, because it's not a slice of life, everyday Odyssey show.
Right.
Yeah, very epic.
Yeah, and yeah, when you do that sort of thing, you kind of have to take a different route.
Well, how did the sound designer and composer collaborate to create such a moving experience? And which comes first, Nate? Is it the sound effects or the music?
Well, I think it's good to have sound effects in place for the composer, because then all the timings are nailed in tight. Because it was such a big show, it was kind of hard to get all the sound effects in place for Jared. So I really had to kind of use my best judgment on where things were going to hit. And Jared is really good at interpreting timing of the hits. And he I'm sure he could hear it in his head when things were going to happen.
I think particularly with any Odyssey show I've done thus far, this was the most collaborative in terms of Nate and I talking on a regular basis about scenes.
Yeah, and our main focus, of course, is the music, but those sound effects. I mean, there were some challenging effects that you had to pull off. What were the most challenging ones, Nate, and where might we find those as we listen to the shows?
One very simple thing that happens is that Nina eventually has to get into a lifeboat. It's not like a fishing boat. I don't have one to go even try out. Finding somebody getting into that size of a boat and having that being lowered in the midst of, you know, the turmoil and everything, that's actually quite challenging. And if you listen to the cue that Jared did there, It's just amazing.
Hmm.
Hearing her feet get into a boat and hearing the metal and the pulleys and the stuff lowering the ship down. I love the cue that happens right there at that moment. So yeah. Kudos, Jared.
Aw. Thanks, man. That was a powerful moment.
Yeah,
We've still got a few days before our listeners are going to get a chance to hear that, but it's something to listen for when they do on February 1st. Nate, you know, something that our audience may not know is that you are quite the musician yourself. How do those sensibilities help you communicate with Jared or other composers as they set out to create the score for a show?
Well, I don't like to lead composers by the nose. I feel like, you know, I'm hired to do what I do. And so I extend that courtesy to my composers. They're hired to do what they do, and that is an interpretation of what's going on. If anything, it would be slight things like, you know, Jared, I'm looking for the cue to start here. But then Jared goes off, and he makes a lot of crucial decisions on character themes, revisiting character themes. There's a ship theme. He revisits that, and I'd love for him to talk about how he comes up with some of that. But at the end of it, he does such a good job that it's just basically me saying something stupid like, hey, Jared, do you think you could hold this note out a little bit longer? It really is not, you know, major overhaul stuff where you come back and say, you know, Jared, you just really missed this one altogether.
Yeah, Jared, how about some of those character themes and the different things that Nate just alluded to?
You know, I've really come to believe that my job is to make you believe what you're hearing is true. And if I can do that, I've succeeded. And I know that sounds like a really kind of out there concept, but it's really not. And it's really funny how music makes you believe something's true, because there is no music playing in your life when drama happens. When you drive on the highway, there's no score to your life. But yet somehow, in this context of audio drama and cinema, music is essential to make you believe things are going on. It's just bizarre, isn't it, if you really think about it? And so that's kind of what I wanted to do, is, okay, how do I make you believe you are seeing the Titanic for the first time and that grandeur and the majesty of all of that? And, well, I find a couple of chords, and they were just so good for the Titanic. They were majestic, and they were kind of brassy and regal. But man, once you heard that, you're like, I could see the boat.
Hmm.
And that would go through the whole thing, you know, finding a theme for Nina and her father that kind of lives together, and it, you know, finding a timeless theme, had a little tragedy that had just not romance, but just something emotional about it. You find those themes, and all of a sudden you really believe in the relationships you're hearing. Music is just so mysterious that way.
It really is. And you brought up an interesting point. If I wanted to have a score to my life, how much would that cost? And how long would it take you to put together? Because I would love that.
It's like a 24/7 score to your life.
Yes.
That I'm just composing. All I'm doing is like sitting at my keyboard with a camera on you, scoring your life.
Let's talk.
I'm trying to figure out what the melody would be for added two meetings in the morning.
Yes.
Late to lunch, late to the podcast recording.
Right.
What does that sound like?
What would that look like? That would be
I'm trying to figure out how to charge for it.
Well, Jared, the song Nearer My God to Thee played a significant role in this story. How is your process different when arranging music that's already out there, like a classic hymn, versus composing some of your own material?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, and I personally think that you always walk a tightrope when you choose to use an existing piece of music that will hold a significant place in the story, because the danger is to overuse the piece of music and then it loses its emotional power. And, you know, I might be wrong, but I think Nate and I even made a decision once to actually cut one place in the show where that music was going to go. I think we felt that to use it one more time might dilute it, you know? And so you really want that hymn to never lose that kind of razor's edge of the storytelling process. But, you know, I will say that it's pretty funny is that, you know, the beginning of episode one features the song being played on the piano as if you're sight reading it. And I'm not a fantastic solo piano player, but you still wanted the mistakes to sound natural. And so I must have recorded like 20 takes of me trying to sound like a beginner fumbling through the piece, you know, and I would send them to Nate, and I would learn the piece on piano, and I would run downstairs for like 5 minutes, and I'd run up to my studio, hit record, play, and then go do it again and do it again, because I just wanted it to sound like a limited recall of finger muscle movement. And it was hilarious how long it takes to get something to sound naturally mediocre.
You should have called us. We could have helped you.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm great at sounding really bad on the piano.
I could have saved hours of my life.
You know, this show is split between, of course, present day Odyssey and events aboard the Titanic, which happened, you know, more than 100 years ago. So, Jared, you talked about some of the chords and different things you did to make it sound sort of historic and Titanic. How is that different than the scenes with the present day Odyssey that you did?
I think one of the most important things was actually to find the thing that would join it together. And it was an easy answer simply because the piano is part of the mystery of the show, you know, a physical piano. And so the piano kind of becomes its own character in the show, whether the listener really knows it or not. You know, the piano is kind of like playing in tandem with Nina's feelings throughout this, both shows. And in the present day, the piano certainly has like a mysterious feel to it. But I kind of wanted it also to feel lonely and empty, kind of reflective of Nina's life, you know. And some of the way I play the piano would leave you with a sense of like isolation. But, you know, when the Titanic hits the iceberg and is being thrust around in future scenes, you know, I really start like banging on the piano, like in ranges that just cascade up and down. I really wanted the piano to feel like it's being tossed around on the ship. And so the piano sort of became the constant through the score.
Yeah, well, you've done a lot of different kinds of shows, Jared, for us and for others. And it would seem like this episode would take longer to score than a lot of them, not just because it's a multi-part show, but due to the various levels of intensity and emotion. Is that true?
It took about 3 weeks to score, and that's kind of normal for me. But okay. I think, honestly, as I've gotten older, I take longer to score. And you might think that's the opposite. You would think, you know, surely, Jared, as you continue to write music, aren't you getting better and faster and all that? And I think I think what actually improves in me the most is my filter and how I actually become my own inner critic. And more music ends up on in the proverbial trash can now than ever. And I think that's what takes the longest. And so, you know, for Unsinkable to take 3 weeks, it's simply because, you know, I might find an idea that I think is going to work, but I have the ability to iterate it now in a way I didn't in my youth. And it's that process of iteration and refinement that takes a long time.
Does that ever have anything to do with the fact that because you've done this before, you're trying not to repeat yourself?
Yes. Yeah. I have this major fear of repeating myself, you know, and that's different than developing your own style. And I think I'm always striving to find the next chord or the next perspective of how to solve a musical problem. And that's the stuff that takes me forever, you know, because I want to keep growing. I want to still make an artistic statement, even though I'm still working for Adventures in Odyssey.
And Nate, once Jared's done with the score and it's complete, how do you go about working it into the episode? It just can't be a matter of just hitting a button and have it just overlay. There's got to be more into that.
I've given this advice to people before, and that is the human voice is king. If you go and listen to a symphony, it all sounds great. But as soon as you introduce a voice, the human ear has to hear it. The same philosophy applies. So I'll take Jared's music. My promise to him is that we'll hear every note. And so in order to do that, I've got to make that music wrap around the vocals. If we can't hear the vocals, we're going to disconnect.
Right.
So I've got a promise to the listener and I've got a promise to Jared. And so the two get wrapped together to where we get the most impact that we can get, along with sound effects and everything else. It's, you know, one more potato in the sack, you know. that's kind of what I do.
Yeah. And, you know, and the thing is, as I've gotten older, I have learned to orchestrate for audio drama differently. And when I say that, I pay really a lot of attention to sort of the frequencies that the voices are living in, and meaning like a young girl like Nina will live in a different audio space than, say, her father. And I really take a lot of time with my orchestrations to make sure that they're not living in the same space that the actor is living in. And ultimately, that hopefully will help Nate mix, because actually then you don't have to mix. It's sort of like I'm helping you mix because of my musical decision.
Now, when you say living in the same space, can you maybe unpack that for us a little bit? Because when I think about it from an audio design standpoint, I think the key is, Nate, correct me if I'm wrong, is we want to make it sound like people are in the same space, no matter where in the studio they are. But at the same time, it sounds like you're wanting to accomplish something a little different there, Jared.
Yeah, I'm speaking of more of like frequencies, that everybody's voice sits in a different like frequency range. And so a young girl's voice would sit in a higher frequency range and a man's voice would sit in lower frequency range. Meaning like there have been times where, let's say I'm writing a scene and I think, boy, you know, it would really sound great if the trumpets just take over and take that melody. And musically, that might be a great decision. But all of a sudden, like that actor's voice is totally lost and you realize the trumpet is fighting with that voice. Mm. Maybe if I put it up in the woodwind, say an octave above in the flutes, all of a sudden everything breathes.
Gotcha.
And the same would go true is there's many times where I'll be like, you know what? I should really take that French horn down an octave. That might not be what I would like to do if I was writing my own piece of music, but I'm not. And I want you to hear that melody. So let's put it down the octave. And now the actor is kind of like above the horn, so to speak.
We have the same kind of thing in the magazine world where when you're designing a page, right, if it's a blue background, you probably don't use a turquoise font on it because the two will compete with each other and they'll cancel each other out and you can't differentiate one from the other. So I
right.
think that's really
very
cool.
Similar. Very similar. Yeah.
You know, before we go, I would like to ask you one last question, Jared, and that is there a cue, one of your music cues that you're particularly proud of, maybe something our fans can listen for either in part one if they go back and hear it again or coming up in part two?
Yeah, you know, in part two, towards the more front end of part two, cue number 22, not that the listener will know, but it's really when our action kicks into high gear. And, you know, it's just like every once in a while you get to write something and you go, boy, that really works in the context of the story and it's a satisfying piece of music. And so for me, that scene really was so enjoyable to write. And really turned out to be what I think one of like a standout cue in the show.
Well, let's hear a clip of it right now. That's fantastic. Wow.
You know, Jared, when we heard the music to this in playback, my immediate thought was talk to Nathan, get Jared on the podcast. We want to talk to him about this. Thanks for taking time to talk with us today.
Oh, wow. You guys are quite welcome. It really means a lot to me. Thank you so much.
And Nate, for your awesome work with sound design and sound effects. And it's just great having you in the studio.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
You can hear Unsinkable Part 1 in the Adventures in Odyssey Club right now. Part 2 premieres in just a few days, on February 1st.
Let's hear a preview.
This month on the Adventures in Odyssey Club, Nina's voyage on the Titanic continues.
They wanted the captain awakened. This must be serious.
It could sink.
It will sink.
You must make sure to get on one of those lifeboats.
Not until I find my father.
Send help immediately. Loading women and children into lifeboats. Lifeboat capacity at 50%.
It's a story of the Titanic you've never heard before. This month on the Adventures in Odyssey Club.
Lots of surprises in store. Oh, and don't forget, all the episodes in Album 68, Out of the Blue, are up in the club now, too.
They'll be coming to download, CD, and the radio soon, so we'll be talking to the cast and crew on the podcast in the days ahead.
That's all for this edition of the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast, a presentation of Focus on the Family.
Visit our website at witsend.org/podcast or call us at 1-800-A-FAMILY.
And if you haven't already done so, you can join the club at aioclub.org. I'm Bob.
And I'm Jesse, reminding you that with God in your life, every day's an adventure.